Greetings, everybody. Welcome. I never thought I'd say this again, actually. Welcome to Midweek in the City. And I am glad that you're here. Many of you I know, some of you I don't. I used to be part of this every week. Now it's in much better hands, more capable hands with Megan Langan. And so, anyway, I'm very glad to be here at Midweek in the City. I've heard good things about it, and I have. I've heard good things about Midweek in the City.
You're the one that started.
I've heard good things about Midweek in the City, especially under Megan's leadership of this. So I will try my best to. I meant to wear my bracelet WWMD. What would Megan do? But I didn't. I forgot it. But anyway, we do have for your consideration this evening a good friend. He's a friend of mine. He's a friend of Megan's. He's a friend of First Baptist Church San Antonio. He may be a friend of some of y'all's. And he's part of this congregation of First Baptist Church San Antonio. And his name is Ian Thompson. Ian is a physician. And he's just a multifaceted, multi-talented individual, and he comes from a long line of family physicians, or of physicians, not family physicians, yeah, but physicians. And so medicine is in his blood, not actual medicine, but although
oh,
I don't what's that?
Maybe
it is. Yeah, we'll have to see your chart later, but. But Ian has been gracious enough through the years to be with us at Midweek in the City. And I think several years ago, Ian, we talked about the state of the healthcare system, the healthcare delivery system,
right,
in the United States, and fee for services, and what, you know, where all that has gone. But tonight, and this is, I'm stewarding Megan's thinking on this, and she shared all this with me. We're talking about caring for these vessels that God has given us, these bodies. And it is, I will say this, it is a wonder of the creation of God that we are human beings, and a human being is an embodied spirit, and the idea of life with God, eternal life, is not an idea of one day leaving this body and becoming a spirit, fully spirit. The idea is one of being renewed and restored in our bodies as embodied spirits. The reality of resurrection underscores and undergirds our faith. When we think of resurrection, we think of Jesus rising from the dead, and that's absolutely true. But the Bible tells us that resurrection is actually a preview. Jesus' resurrection was actually a preview of what will happen with all who count on Christ. All who count on Christ will one day be raised and will have a physical body, a renewed body, restored body, and that body and spirit together, like you are now, except will live forever because it will be unencumbered, unweighed down by sin and pain and regret and despair and suffering. And so this sounds like a fairy tale, too good to be true, but actually that's a strength of the gospel. It's like, what would you do if you were tasked with solving all the problems? Ultimately, you would arrive at a reset. You would say, there's got to be some way to start over and reset and make things new. Well, that's exactly what God has done. and what he promises. So in the meantime, we are called to care for everything that God has created, and that includes the body. And so we're going to talk about what it means to live spiritually in our bodies. And we'll do that in a moment. And right now, though, at your tables, before we begin here, I would like you to discuss this question. And the question is, what's the best thing and what's the most difficult thing, two different things, about having a body? Okay? So, I mean, that can go a variety of directions, as you know. So the best thing and the most difficult thing in your own experience about having a body. And then just talk for a few minutes about that, and then we'll bring it on back to the interview with our very special guest, Ian Thompson. So 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, everybody. Thank you for having that conversation around your tables. We're gonna continue this line of conversation here, and we will explore this with somebody whose very livelihood and training has been with the matters concerning the human body. So please welcome to Midweek in the City, Ian Thompson, Dr. Ian Thompson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ian, for being
here.
Glad
to be here.
Really, this is great. Let us all hear, if you would, about you, your family, how long you've been here at, actually, we were just talking about some of this, First Baptist Church.
Sure.
And what areas you serve in here in this congregation, but give us a little bio first.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I think it's great to be with you all and the opportunity to speak on some of the stuff. I grew up here in San Antonio. Was born shortly after my parents moved here, courtesy of Uncle Sam with the Army. Had a very atypical military career for my father, and he spent almost 20 years here in San Antonio. We only moved once and then moved right back about a year later. And so that actually worked out, worked out well. I went to a little Presbyterian church up here on 281 and Brook Hollow area.
Yeah.
And came to know the Lord junior year of high school. And I share this because I think it's important. Never take for granted that somebody knows that Jesus wants a personal relationship with them. It wasn't until I got a new youth minister at my church. I knew a lot of little stories from the Bible, but either it wasn't the right time for me to put it all together, or it just required somebody to say, hey, how's your walk with the Lord going? I'm like, walk what?
Yeah.
Where are you going? Like, that's real. Like, that we serve a God that desires a personal relationship. So I always throw that out there. Like, that's probably one of the reasons I'm passionate about evangelism and stuff, is being able to tell people that in various forms and fashions. Went to A&M for undergrad. And to go back to the food origin story, at the time I was kind of dating and hanging out with a girl that had grown up in a Baptist church up in Burney. And so when it came to coming to church, went to church there, and they had a lot of food at the Baptist church in College Station. And a lot of Bible studies. And I was like, y'all take your Bible to church? This is,
yeah.
I mean, found the BSM, or Baptist Student Ministries, across from the camp, across from Northgate. And they had a hot meal 3 days a week and a Bible study. So,
can't beat that.
Yeah. So when I came back to San Antonio after graduating, I was just telling Brian I took a gap year, before applying to medical school. And I knew I needed to find a different place. And I'd been involved in the church up there and grown in my faith a lot. Things like Breakaway Ministries and things like that. And it just, I'm very grateful for the people at the Baptist Student Ministries and the church that supported that, the Sunday school teachers that I had at the church that I went there. So all these folks play a role. And parked in the parking lot here one night, going to a function at what is now the Tobin Center. It used to be the Municipal Auditorium.
Municipal Auditorium, yeah.
And some high schoolers out there, come park here.
And I didn't know that.
And the ticket that they put in your windshield was a spiritual track / invitation to come to church. I got in the car after we got in after the municipal. This is like a Saturday night, and I said, "I'm in the market for a new church. I think I'm going to come in here tomorrow." Tell my mom. Came in the next morning into the foyer here, and it's really cool, Miss Salbritton, who, if you see that piece of artwork up there in the foyer, her picture's there. And she was the lady that, maybe the first person that greeted me when I came into church that day. And so I see that picture there now, and I'm like, she was the first really welcoming place and welcoming face that, and I think all of us can attest to that, to the welcoming nature and loving nature of this church, which I think is critical. And she pulled Stephen Carroll aside, introduced me to all sorts of folks, and the rest is history. Don Guthrie called me later that week. Yeah. It may have been Monday, and sort of found this is my home. then subsequently started medical school the next year, and during that year met my wife, now wife, uh-huh. Megan, who some of you may know here in the church, and started dating. And we were in the singles group through medical school, and then we got married between graduation and starting of medical school and starting internship. And then I moved on to Nashville. We lived in Nashville for 5 years where I did my surgical training there at Vanderbilt. Came back here and did a fellowship in urologic oncology or cancer surgery at the university and stayed on for faculty there for a few years. Went to business school, did my MBA, the executive MBA program at UTSA while I was on faculty. And then got offered a chief medical officer job with Christus Health in 2015. But the dean of the medical school wouldn't let me take it, that job. He said there's some conflict of interest thing, and it's a long story.
I remember some of that.
It was a trying time. It was a trying time. You spend all this time and all this money, this education. And I was 35. I get offered this, what was a good job at that young age. And really the only reluctance of the CEO of the hospital at the time said, he says, well, you're this young. You're going to have to go talk to surgeons and doctors that are almost twice your age and tell them when they've messed up and have those tough conversations with folks. And anyway, he gave me a shot at it. But the thing is that I had to have a blessing from the dean of the medical school because that's where my practice was. And he said no, and I tried to lobby reasons why I should have this part-time administrative job. And where we did a lot of our clinical work already from a service line standpoint, urology. And he called me one day, and he said, final answer, we're not letting you take the job. I said, well, don't be surprised if I quit. So I found my boss that day and quit my job. I don't know if I ever told you this, but anyway. Came home that day, and Megan was sitting in the...
You did tell me this.
You can imagine my Charlotte was like 3 or 4 years old at the kitchen table, and Megan with, you know, Kate is a baby on her hip cooking dinner that night. And she's, and I walked in from the garage, how's your day? I was like, it's great. I quit my job. And so take advice, okay? Don't do things what I do. And plan a little more in advance. Because Megan wasn't working. And there's, you can imagine, dead silence. Drop the spoon in the pot. Jaw drop, like, what? Were you going to tell me? I was like, you know, it just wasn't working. And today was the day. I was like, don't worry, I've been praying about it. It's good. I was staring at the ceiling the next two nights. I'm like, you know, God, you know, I hope I got this right.
Yeah.
God is good. And I can testify that all night long. But started a practice from scratch. Subsequently ran it out of the front office of our house. My wife, Megan, puts up with a lot with me. She's like, you're not so easy to be married to someday. So it's super lean model. Got a Google Voice number, so it was either coming to either she would answer it or I'd answer it. And we were the only urology practice that you might hear a dog or baby in the background when you called. we didn't see patients at the house. I rented a clinic space from a primary care clinic next to the hospital one day a week. Super lean startup, like I said. Grew that. Now I have total 5 docs and a nurse practitioner. That was in 2016 we started. And done various things. I invest in affordable housing, mostly in the mobile home parks and RV parks, that space. And then in 2019, started a staffing company. So I staff urologists around the country. And urology is a real... There's just not enough urologists to go around. A third are over 65 years of age and half are over 55, and everybody needs urologists. I mean, and as you're an aging population, there's a huge need for that. And so I work to solve those problems, have that growing company, and what else? But don't start one of those 6 months before a global pandemic if you have the chance to know that in advance. It's a great way to go broke. So depending on when you catch me, I'm serially broke. And
Seriously
and Megan
broke.
Is still with me.
Yeah, exactly.
So really, she's the one that gets all the rewards of, again, sticking it out with me. But so what I do in church here, I joined the choir last year, which is awesome. So if anybody wants to join the choir or come test it out, every Wednesday evening, they've got guest folders, and I did it on a whim. That's another story. I'm involved with the Congolese congregation here, and that comes back from during residency training. I traveled to Congo and operated on 2 separate occasions at a fistula hospital in Bukavu with Dennis McQuaggy, a great guy. Vesicovaginal fistulas I really develop out of because of rape and trauma, mostly. Sometimes prolonged obstetric complications and so forth, but mostly rape, which is a tool of war, and what's going on right now there with M23, and it's really sad. And these women got kicked out. You know, they don't have sanitary pads and all the stuff that we have over here, so they, you know, the smell, they get kicked out of their villages and stuff. And this, Dennis McQuaig started this hospital over there to help. He's a gynecologist to get these ladies fixed. So we got to go travel over there and help with some of the more complicated repairs. And he subsequently then won the Nobel Peace Prize several years in 2018 after that. And then one day I was in Sunday school here, and I heard Byron Pitts. If you don't know Byron, he's awesome community, you know, missions pastor. And he I overheard him talking to somebody else in our Sunday school class about Congo. This, I said, what are you talking about? You know, because I have interest there. And he was talking about Pastor John. If you haven't met Pastor John, he's the pastor of the Congolese congregation here. Awesome guy. And he was talking about all these refugees that were getting settled into town and really having big needs. And so told him my experience in the Congo and, you know, what can I do to help? And so a number of us in our Sunday school class started working with Pastor John to really reach out to these refugees that were getting settled in town. 10 or 12 of them being put into an apartment, given a knife and a fork, and they were only in shorts and flip-flops because they just come from a refugee camp in Africa, and said, good luck. And it's December in 2018 when I first started meeting with them. So so I involved with them, started mentoring, if you want to call it that, Pastor John, meeting with him on a regular basis because they had this little congregation that met in Eagles Crest or some other Baptist church up there. But they weren't getting as much support as they wanted. And Pastor John had a dream of building a church. And I said, okay, well, let's figure out the real estate component, the business component, the numbers and everything like that. We would meet at the gyms up here on Broadway before Sunday school. And one morning I met with him and he said, hey, he explained this, you know, described this vivid vision that is a dream that his wife had had. And in short, at the end of it, said, do you think we can start a church in the Congo? And I laughed. I tried not to laugh. I said, Pastor John, I said, we've been meeting around here trying to get your church here in San Antonio. I know nothing. How do you think we're going to start a church halfway around the world? And I said, and I think it's probably a cop-out at the time. I said, let's just pray about it. And I tell this story because it just tells you how small sometimes one's faith can be and how big God is and what is possible. Churches are persecuted. You can't have a house church over there without a permit, all these kind of things. And so to me, it sounded insurmountable to try to actually build a physical structure over there in the Congo. And how would that even happen? Anyway, he calls me a week or so later. He says, so I told him, I said, well, figure out what a permit costs. Let's try to see if we can rent someplace. He calls back. He goes, the permit's like $50. And we found a place to rent for $200 for 6 months. I said, wait, Pastor John, you're saying we can start a church in the Congo for $250? And he goes, yeah. He goes, do you think there's any way we can do it? I said, I don't know. Let's pray about it. Let me see. Next day, Sunday at Sunday school, I gave us a pitch on this and passed the hat around and said, you know, who wants to start a church in the Congo? We raised like $300. So we got a church in the Congo. And the story went that, so that's how I work with the Congolese congregation. And it came out of serving here, serving and loving locally, connected back there.
Yeah.
And I had briefly told the story to Pastor Chris after Freedom Weekend, and then he shared it at the service. The coolest thing is that last weekend, two weekends ago, Freedom Weekend, they had 140-something students here for Freedom Weekend. It was the first time for us hosting for Freedom Weekend. We had 10th grade girls there. And one of the girls at our house was from the Congolese congregation. And I didn't know her, and I was just talking to her. And through the weekend, asked her some questions and kind of her experience and when she came over. And that night, Saturday night, I was listening to the speaker and stuff and just going through old pictures that I have from work with the Congolese. And afterwards, I just showed her.
I said, in Congo?
Here, when we first started working with the refugees. And I showed this girl, I said, do you know this family by chance? Like, I wanted to know what was going on with them because I just remember getting them food and clothes, and imagine taking taking kids that in flip-flops that were a week ago in a refugee camp in Africa
then
coming to the Super Walmart and just try to get them stuff. And she just said, That's me in that picture. This, I'm going to cry here. Sorry. This 10th grade girl that was staying at my house is a little girl that we met who didn't speak a lick of English. Nobody in her family did. And I'm saying it's because this is God. Like that what we do matters. And you may never see that this side of heaven. I feel like you fully will, and it'll all become very clear, the fruit that comes from the seeds that you plant. But that was special for me. And I just share that because that's 6 years later and this girl. So who you talk to, who you love, all that kind of stuff can, you know, pays dividends down. And then down the road. So I'm really passionate about that, evangelism, and serving. So
I see it, hear it.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You did. Okay. That and more. I mean, that's just
so choir, beautiful. Please come. We have open seats.
All this to say, join the choir.
Join the choir.
Yeah, right. Oh, my word.
It's part of my sales pitch when I talk to people.
That just, when you said that, though, about that little girl, you know, it just hit my body, you know, like, and then you said sometimes you don't see things this side of heaven, but
God gives you, I got to see that.
That's pretty awesome.
And I think a lot about in the terms of investments. I'm a number. I like business. But when people talk about return on your investments, what's your ROI in the scope of eternity? Huh. People think of times, right? But when you think in eternity, in the framework of eternity, and what you do now, and the, you know, as, you know, as Einstein that say, compound interest is the whatever wonder of the world.
Yeah.
It's wonder of the world. And what does compound interest look like, you know, when you're investing for the kingdom of God? So,
you decided to go into medicine. You grew up with that, yeah. But what was your own sense of, yes, this is what I want to do?
I think from a young age, I had this, I think the most impactful, you know, my parents were never pushing it. My dad, very, very well known, very successful researcher and academician and surgeon and traveled the world giving talks and so forth. But I think probably the thing, when I reflect, it's like, why did I do it? I think it was the impact of seeing, being out and about town, and patients just coming up when you're out for dinner or something like that and say, you made a difference, or you saved my life, you know, because he's specialized in cancer surgery as well. And so I saw that and just wanted to be of value or service and being able to serve. And I liked science, the idea of surgery. So I knew growing up I wanted to be a surgeon. But I also had this bent for wanting to do business and stuff. And so,
yeah, well, you've elegantly, and I use that word on purpose. I mean, it really is, you've elegantly combined those kinds of things and helping people through medicine and through affordable housing, you know, that you invest in, and then staffing clinics and in addition to, you know, mission work and all that kind of endeavor. But it's really elegant to see how you've put together what look like or seem like diverse interests or disparate interests, I should say. And you've had this beautiful way of putting all of that together, Ian. And it's just, it's really compelling. It really is.
Thanks. Have you seen Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why? Or you've heard his TED Talk, maybe?
I haven't heard the TED Talk. I'm familiar with the book.
The Start With Why. And I think that's important for all of us to do, you know, just like, what am I here for?
That's so good.
And what's the central organizing theme about which you organize your life?
Yeah.
And what you do. And there's, you know, business is a great mission field. I mean, everything, if you treat everything like a mission field.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's there.
And you can also join the choir. But anyway.
Every day.
Aaron better be glad he owes me one for all these plugs. Coming back to that. What's that?
How many times we plug the choir, right?
Exactly. It's ridiculous. The topic of health, Megan tells me, has been brought up and this is kind of confusing because your wife is Megan, but I'm talking about Megan Langan here. And she tells me that the topic of health has come up in midweek because we need, all of us need help in knowing how to care for our bodies in a way that honors God. One of the things that I see as a psychotherapist often is the way that distress often affects how people care for their bodies on an ongoing basis, but also what even before you wind the tape back before that, I see that bodily the body has become a center point of shame for people, and that comes through either sexual trauma sometimes, but it doesn't have to be that. It can be messages that people absorb about who they are and so forth, and so that gets really distorted, you know, how people see themselves as bodily persons. But in all, you know, in medicine and just in all endeavors, the body figures, you know, very importantly, and we all need to know how to care for our bodies in a way that honors God. But let me say that we honor God by stewarding well what God made. And so there's a lot of conflicting advice and thoughts and perspectives about diets and exercise and, you know, what coming from a medical standpoint and a standpoint of a disciple of Jesus Christ, as you are, Ian, even more central to your person, how can we care for our bodies in a way that fulfills the purpose that God made us for, and what mindset should we have about that?
I think from a mindset standpoint, it probably kind of what I just mentioned a little bit is like, why does it matter?
Why does it matter?
Does it matter? Because I think you have to know the why before you know the do or the how. And because especially when it comes to taking care of yourself, I don't want to get out of bed and exercise. Man, that looks like a really good piece of cake or whatever that is for.
I know.
And these are things, and by the way, I'm a urologist, so I tell my wife, I'm like, I don't really count as a doctor half the time. She says, I should have married a pediatrician. They'd be more helpful now. You don't know anything. And so as much as possible, I try to stay in my lane, and that's my caveat, but a disclaimer. But it does come into how when you're a specialist, you have the option of just saying, I'm just going to treat your urologic problem. But so many things, if you're doing a good job, I think, as any type of physician, you got to treat the patient as a whole. And so, yes, I may be dealing with your urinary symptoms, but really I got to talk to you about your diabetes. I got to talk to you about all the stuff that goes in. And if something's out of whack or your blood pressure or what's going on, your cholesterol, I'm not there, but if I'm going to look at your PSA blood test and I'm seeing all this other stuff, I was like, red light. And I've had a couple of those conversations this week. And did you know your LDL, your cholesterol is like, 180, 200? Like, what are you doing about that? And it's, well, I don't know. And it's funny that sometimes their primary care doctor will have been telling them, like, you need to do something about this, do this, something. Uh-huh. And sometimes it just takes a word from the specialist. And I've had this happen a number of times in various scenarios. Wait, you think the same thing as my primary care doctor? Well, maybe, because you said it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get that colonoscopy that my primary care doctor's been harping me on, that kind of thing. So.
Well, that's interesting because a specialist is often seen as like, it's really serious if you have to go see a specialist. Yeah. And so, that word might carry kind of weight.
Yeah. But I think just treating the people as a whole, it comes back to that. And knowing that sometimes what's going on physically is a manifestation of stuff that's going on inside as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Struggles.
Absolutely.
You, right?
Yes.
You see it in your line of work?
I do.
Coping mechanisms. How do you cope with things in life and stress?
Yeah.
A lot of times, they're not healthy things.
I drink cortisol when I get stressed. I just drink gallons of it. The stress, you know, hormone or whatever.
Yes, not exactly. Yeah. No, but people drink. People smoke.
Yeah.
People, you know, eat. There are all sorts of things that people will do. And in that, there's an opportunity to say there's a better way. Have you thought about quitting smoking? And I've gotten this a couple times. I think about it every day. Yeah, right. I quit every day. And I fail.
I really believe in quitting smoking. Yeah. I've done it many, many times. Yeah.
You start the next day.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Jesus. Call in a higher power. Anyway. Yeah. And I'm not joking. And it's, you know, there's so many ways to introduce the gospel in medicine.
Sure. You bet. Absolutely.
But I think it comes back to, like, is the why. And what is there? I mean, there's all sorts of information out there. And I think that it's what I tell people. Even, you know, I get asked in the context, okay, you just diagnosed me with cancer. What should I do? Well, honestly, there's no data to say it. Much of anything of that when it comes to cancer management. It's just, except for, you know, just eating well, sleeping well, getting good exercise, doing stuff. Being engaged in community is probably one of the strongest pitches that I give to my patients all the time. Especially I take care of older people as they're talking about retiring and everything. And I give them my pre- or post-retirement speech. I've condensed it to this, get busy living or get busy dying is what I do. But part of it's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is because many people have their lives, like, it all comes down to this world is suffering from an identity crisis. And people are wrapped up in their work or other stuff. And then when that guy goes away, either because the business cut down, you know, shut down, a lot of that going on these days, losing jobs.
That's right.
Or it comes time to retire or health or whatever. Who am I? Right.
Well, you're getting into theology of the body there, which was my next question. I mean, the why and the who am I, this is a very creation-oriented kind of thing. Who am I made to be? And we disconnect the body from that often. We really, really do, which is one of the reasons I really love how you said being involved in community is actually good for your body because it is one of the things that we must have is connection with other people. I mean, connection with God is paramount. But he said, love God and love your neighbor. Right? See, there's this connection there that we have to. It's not just a good option. We're designed to be connected to people,
despite what the world may tell you.
That's right.
Right? You don't need to come to church. Just watch it on TV.
Exactly.
The TV ministry is important. I pitch it every day.
That's awesome.
One patient on Monday said, I was flipping the channel, and by mistake, I found you. A sea of gray, and then your black hair.
Okay, that is hilarious. That's kind of a backhanded compliment to the choir, by the way.
Well, I told them, I said, the only reason they haven't kicked me out is because I bring the average age down, and they've told me that.
That's so good.
A plug for the TV ministry and what they do, because it's a point of access for many people that don't have the ability to come down here or be plugged into community but can somehow feel connected. And when you invite somebody to church and tell somebody about Jesus, and then if they're like, you don't even have to get out of your pajamas, just turn on the TV. and they're like, it's so disarming, and it's like, it's so easy. It's an easy point. And you wouldn't believe how many, I've been doing that for years, and how many people that probably have a good number of patients that have never stepped foot in this church, but watch it on TV now.
Right.
Or will tell you, or have subsequently then come.
Well, I was going to say, sometimes there's this longing that begins to arise often in people to say, I've seen this, and I want to be
I want to experience
in this.
That, yeah.
Yeah. I want to experience that.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
And so, but if you look at the blue zones, you know, all that stuff, and the, you know, where people live longer.
Yes.
A lot of that, the data supports community engagement.
Say
community.
A little bit more about that, because there may be some that are not.
So the blue zones are, and don't call me. I think it's is it a documentary on Netflix? I haven't actually watched this, but you would look at the, you know, Sicily, all these places, and again, don't quote me on this stuff. But
yeah,
there are data to support the value of increased longevity with those that are engaged community, or their culture is one where community is important.
Right, right, where it's not a solitary, individualistic kind of
exactly.
culture. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And so Blue places zones. That have have front porch. That you know, how do you create the front porch? And I gotta give a shout out to Bob Lingle, who's the guy that ran the MBA program there. And that, the MBA program that I did was very big on the soft skills and how do you have those critical conversations? How do you create that front porch and have good, solid conversations? But physically, how do you create that sort of environment where people can connect? It's important.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And so we're these body, emotion, or body, mind, and spirit, you know. We have the cognition, we have the body, we have the spiritual component, and we are all of those areas are created by God, and I think we can exercise our brains and our the way we think and the cognition. And we can exercise even being around other people, perhaps, and having a good time or whatever. And we can exercise, those kind of friendship connections and spiritual connections. But often, when it comes to the body, sometimes in Christian groups and churches and so forth. I know I grew up with a little bit of, and this was never stated, but a little bit of, well, you know, one of these days you're just gonna shed this old body, you know, and you're just gonna fly away to God. And the Bible does talk about resurrection, and about the physicality of Jesus's resurrection. You know, he ate a piece of fish. Yeah. You know, that was one of the first things he said after he appeared to his disciples. Do you have anything to eat? You know, and so it's so, when it comes to the physical, it's really hard sometimes to actually do something about it. And what is your motivation for taking exercise? I mean, how do you?
So I'm not the best, and I'll own it.
Okay, but I've heard you speak about, exercising.
Yeah. So
sometimes I'll own it too.
Sometimes. Credit to my wife to helping me focus on things that are going to help me, because it's easy to get wrapped up in the. This is from. I always seem to get this. The enemy of the important is the urgent.
Right.
That's something that I read in the Christianity Explored thing. If you haven't done Christianity Explored, great study. It's a great, I used to teach in that. And
that's another good shout out. Yeah.
I just shout out the whole church.
Oh,
it's
I
got
know.
A great ministry
FBCSA, program. FBCSA. Enough said. Yeah.
It's where it's at. but anyway, there's always more work to do. Always more work to do. But I tell this to my patients, and a lot of patients I have that take care of their spouse or significant other or some other family member. You got to take care of yourself to take care of those that you love.
That's good.
So then, that's something that, and I'm not always good. I have Dr. Peppers, and I'm better than I used to be. One day, Kate, she's now 10, she comes home, she wears glasses, and she looked over, she goes, "Dad, that's the last Dr. Pepper in the fridge you're going to get. There's $7 a box now. Mom's not getting you anymore." And so she's going to be an accountant. She likes to count things, and she an accountability partner. So I'm better than I used to be. But exercise and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you said was that your wife encourages you or has encouraged you to do that.
She got me a trainer, and so she got me a trainer because she's like, "You're hunched over from operating your neck and your back, and you're paying for this stuff. You just need to work on your strength," and which is true.
But even so, what you're saying here is, Megan a trainer. What you're saying is having someone to come alongside you to say, you can do this. That could be somebody that you reach out to that you say, help me do this. In relationship, and this actually could take care of some of the connection that we're looking for with people too. Yeah. But to take care of our physical bodies, it may take, and often it does take somebody to encourage you. Yeah. And so we can reach out, whether we have spouses or friends or
neighbors,
you know,
whatever.
Associates, whatever. Yeah. We can say, would you help me do this?
Yeah. Let's meet at the gym. I mean, some of the best times when I, you know, was training and running during residency, when you're working 80 to 100 hours a week at a time, but there are three of us that we would get together and run really early in the morning. And
right.
I was training for half marathon and all this stuff. And it was like, I did not want to get up many of those mornings and go run at 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning.
Absolutely.
But those other two guys were going to be there. And I didn't want to be the guy that didn't show up. And so I'm really good at showing up when somebody else is going to be there. If it's only relies on me, sometimes I can, you know, it's a mindset thing. You're like, oh, let's get hit snooze. And I don't have to do it. I'll get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But it's the trainer. It holds me accountable to make sure I go and I lift weights. It's helped my core strength. It's helped with joints. I hurt my hip training for marathon last year and still working through that. So I'm not as good but that's working with a trainer has helped me a lot.
And absolutely.
So an accountability partner in anything.
A trainer, a running group, a spouse, a friend, you know, whatever. You're helped by other people to push your body into greater health. What has your medical practice taught you about God?
So much. My medical practice is really my mission field. I mean, that's why I'm.
Yeah.
That's why I still do what I do.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Where else can I see 30 people in a day and pray with people, tell them about Jesus? Because we talked about last time, it's gotten a lot worse. I mean, on Monday I'm seeing clinic and I get the clerk gets an email or turns to the other person working in the office. Did y'all get this email? They say their hospital's closing next door. And sure enough, the hospital where I do all my cases is closing down. And I heard about it from my front. And as I got 30 other people to see that day and process that. So the business of medicine is broken, and it's just getting worse. I'll be in D.C. next week advocating for payment reform and stuff just to help.
Help
docs keep access. So call your congressman. I've written a congressional bill to try to get introduced. I'm just trying to get somebody introduced that will help with some of that stuff. I'll talk for hours about this kind of stuff, but it's really important. So you got to make the business model sustainable to have people show up every day to take care of folks.
Yeah.
So when I get up in the morning, sometimes it doesn't make economic sense anymore. You're just like, the reason why I go to work and the reason why is because of God. I had struggles in the OR a few weeks ago. Equipment was dinged, all sorts of operational headaches, and I was like, today may be the day I quit.
Yeah.
And I had to do a lot of moving thesis and flustered and a little bit of feet stomping. But I got the patients taken care of. And there's one that took a lot of extra work, not because of the patient, but because of issues at the hospital. And it was a struggle. And that weekend, the patient had got my number about something and ended up texting me and said, thank you so much. You know, what you do matters. Like, that is a much more valuable currency for me than any dollar I'll get paid for what I do, taking care of people. But what was special was that 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I get a card in the mail from her mother. So this lady I took care of was in her 50s. So her mom's got to be in her 70s or 80s. From Iowa, who said, thank you so much. I had been praying and praying and praying that she would find somebody to take care of her in a timely manner as well, because she was struggling and stuff with this issue, whatever. We got her taken care of, and she's fine now. But she wrote like 4 or 5 pages typed out, stuffed into this envelope, and a lot of it, there's a lot of Jesus in there. I've been praying. I was able to minister to this lady as well. I didn't know, you know, who's married to a, you know. So anyway, there was, that's what counts, I think.
Yeah.
And we all need that reassurance. So when you think about it, and you have the opportunity to give somebody an encouraging word, do it.
Wow.
Mary Kay had this, and I'm going to mess up the quote, that everybody's walking around with a sign around their neck, an invisible sign around their neck. And I'm going to miss it. But essentially saying, like, acknowledge me, like, I want to be, you know. And so I think it's important. And that's what being the hands and feet of Jesus is, as I think about it more and more, is to the woman at the well, he said, I see you.
Yeah. I see you. Yeah.
And that's what people want to be. I hear you. I'm with you. You know? And so that's my practice. People that are broke. I mean, so much of the stuff we talk about is not even urology. I can knock out the urology in 5 minutes, but like, you know, what's going on with you? How can I pray for you? I had a patient recently that when I saw him, it was by the grace of God that a referral had come in, and PSA was through the roof. And she's like, got the manager. And this was a new employee that we had. It's like, this doesn't look right. And like, and I normally am in clinic only on Mondays, and I ended up seeing this guy on a Thursday or Friday, and we were able to get him taken care of. Just bad disease, and for some in a walker, and you know, because of complications of his cancer, and saw him recently. He's just, and the guy would just, you know, was just testifying about God. He's like, I'm pain free, and I'm doing well, and he's doing a lot better, and was on this. It's bad, but it's. And so I told him about, we were talking about healing. And I told them about how we were studying the woman that touched the cloak of Jesus.
Yeah.
And I tell many patients that say, you know, in the setting of cancer, cancer or no cancer, none of us is guaranteed tomorrow. So I could be hit by a truck tomorrow. And so it's important not to say cancer is like that. This is a thing. You know, we all have our struggles, and just live each day to its fullest. And then the guy turns around and he goes, you know, but think about the leper, he told, you know, and this guy, even, I met him one time, and, you know, the first time I met him, he said, I met, then we were talking about church, and he said, I met Don Guthrie at, you know, at some big event, you know, citywide event, and he used to come to the old lunches that they had at the 4th Street. The 4th Street,
wow,
or whatever.
That's a long time ago.
And he was saying, and anyway, I said, don't, you know, he was just talking about, I told the leper, don't go tell anybody, you know, after he healed. But then I said, he told everybody. And I said, how can we not? How can we not? And then I just thought, like, and I just chewed on that for, like, and the truth is, like, how can we not talk about Jesus?
Yeah.
And it really should compel us to, anyway, that was tangents. So my clinical practice is that it's a place of ministry. And that's, I think, an encouragement for anybody that you don't need to be halfway around the world to be a missionary. Like, it is where you are at is where you're supposed to be, and there are opportunities to speak into people's lives at the grocery store, anything.
I'm so glad you said that. Where you are is not only just where you've ended up, it's where you're supposed to be. And in that sense, all is well. Because you're supposed to be there, and in that space, you can live significantly for God. Yeah. Whether it's medicine or whatever.
Today I spent, you know, I was operating all day today, or most of the day today, in an operating room where everybody had just found out 2 days before they were losing their jobs.
Yeah.
How do you minister in that moment?
Yeah. Yeah.
You say God has a plan for you. And there's nuances on how you say that.
You're right. You're right.
And a lot of it's mindset. You sit there and wallow and say, man, this door's been slammed in my face. And I can tell you stories all day long about, you know, being broke, you know, how's it going to work out, you know, things. Yep. I mean, and, you know, professional, you know, stumbling blocks, whatever, like, or just, you know, doors being closed, if you will.
Yeah.
But the reality, it's all, it comes down to what you believe in, you know, and challenges, big challenges I've been going with my staffing business recently. And Wednesday morning, a few weeks back, 3 or 4 weeks back, there's a song that we sang during Christmas at First last year, not this past, you know, a year and a half ago. Uh-huh. It's called No Night There, and it's, and all the thing that was coming through my mind that morning was, God is, legal battles and so forth that I was dealing with, and it's like, God is for you, God is with you, God is for you, God is with you. And that was just going through my mind that morning. And like, I hadn't thought about that song. I mean, it's a beautiful song since Christmas the First last year. I come to church that Wednesday evening, and it's in my folder for us to start practicing.
Oh, yeah,
I said, man, this is pretty cool. Like, these are like little God winks that you get.
That was just like 2 weeks ago or something like that, wasn't it? Yeah.
And that thing was on Wednesday morning. That was 2 days after I'd gotten a 24-page demand letter from some big corporate lawyer out of Boston that just takes you to your, you know, so... that's another story. But God is with you. God is for you. If you remember, I mean, things like that. It's important.
Ian, we're going to leave it there.
Okay.
This is so rich, I can hardly stand it. Oh. I mean, it is just beautiful. I'm waiting for the book someday.
All right.
I hope you write it. I really do. And it's just, you're beautifully gifted at helping us see how beautiful God is in our lives where we are and how beautiful we are to God. And that's I think people can feel better being around you.
Oh,
and I'm so grateful for that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us here tonight. And
let's
thank
pleasure.
Ian for being here.
Thank you.
Y'all, you heard a lot of amazing stuff. I want to invite you to take a few minutes to pray for folks around your tables, if you would. Just pray for one another. If you can. Do that, and then we'll call it a night. Okay? Thanks, everybody, for being a part of this.
Can I share something really quick?
Sure.
Okay.